Man of the hour is here. Ndimbwe Mpamba joins us now in studio. Now, he was born HIV positive and he's now 34. He's one of the longest living people in Africa who were born with the virus. And he's the oldest person in Africa and the second oldest in the world. He is a passionate activist. He carries out talks at churches, at various corporates, at schools and health centers. He's also a UNICEF peer educator and a goodwill ambassador for the AIDS Consortium, which is one of the largest NGOs in South Africa. So ahead of World AIDS Day, we're exploring his life because this has been his lifelong reality. Good afternoon, Ndimbwe. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Azania. And to the listeners, I'm still alive and still going strong.
34, right?
And 11 months and 30 days.
I love people who count down to the day like that. And it just takes us back to the conversation we were having in the previous half hour. So you became aware of your HIV status when you were very young. You were 12.
No, at the age of 23.
23, you became aware.
Yes.
But as a child, you were generally very sickly.
From the age of 4, I was put on vitamins. And my mother put them into sachets and said they were sweets.
Oh.
So being a cartoon fanatic of Roger Ramjet, Popeye, I saw the say, I'm the superhero of the family.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a cover-up that did not want to ask questions.
So they didn't reveal to you?
They didn't.
Yes.
Because it was a secret that was kept from me my whole life.
And you only found out much later when
an
aunt told
you. At the age of 23, yes. To say, at the age of 30, she told me that she's read of my story,
mm-hmm.
but hearing it from me made sense to say she always knew and she confirmed that it wasn't my wrongdoing but a fault in production.
Yes. So when did you find out about
at the age of 23?
At 23.
Yes,
so when you were younger, it was just being sickly.
I was 3/4 of my life was spent in and out of hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That I got to smell medication and tell you what it is without even being a medical doctor.
Sure. So you lost both your parents, your mom to tuberculosis and your dad to meningitis.
Yes.
And you came to South Africa from Zambia and then you went back and then came back
yes.
again.
Uh-huh.
And there were some desperate moments, of course, in your life where your CD4 count was very low. At one point, it stood at 8 another point.
That's the time
36.
When I defaulted. The first time I was diagnosed, I was at 36.
36.
And the minimum for an average person is 800.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started calculating the difference between an average and me, whether I multiplied by 20, it would still not get to the minimum.
Yeah.
So them telling me that news, my mind shut down. And I thought, say, where am I headed? Is it to the graveyard or this is something that I never thought of?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was put on medication of 10 tablets in the morning, 10 in the evening, and my ARVs were put in the fridge, my CD4 count shot to 490.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got cocky and defaulted.
So you have to be very disciplined and adherent.
Yes, that's very true.
Yeah, yeah. So when you say that, when you talk about death, there's a documentary that's coming up called Eviction.
Yes.
And that's an interesting title. As you say, you've been evicted out of the grave.
Really? Yeah, so many times. I've met death more than 12 times.
Sure. And you even agreed to be part of medical trials.
That was the only way of surviving.
Mm-hmm.
Because the private sector gave up on me because they could not find the drug that was resistant. So I was thrown to the Department of Health, the government, and they said, we don't deal with breadcrumbs. The Americans are the ones who know how to deal with breadcrumbs because I was a dead person walking.
That's how they described
it? Yeah, they were very straight to the point. I was a dead person ready to be declared dead
mm-hmm.
in an ICU, several drips, via pipe, everything, even though I never had a will to declare.
Mm-hmm.
So they told me that the Americans have got research drugs.
Yeah,
I jumped in without even reading the letter of content. I signed it in less than 30 seconds. Weeks later, my viral load dropped. My serial count shot up. Not really shooting up, but from 8 to 186.
Mm-hmm.
From then on, the Americans took me under research for 5 years. And they never found a single side effect.
To the medicine?
Yes.
So you submitting yourself like that has helped thousands and millions of people
all over
the world.
Yes.
Because you say that in the trials, mm-hmm. there are a number of people who didn't survive.
They didn't. In the saquinava, which is a very toxic, deadly drug, which gives you 98% of death.
Mm-hmm.
They even emphasize a death-threatening whatever drug. Now, I got to change the odds of making the death to living.
Mm.
and the other two have gone to the graveyard.
Sure. So there were three of you there as part of this trial.
Yes.
Right. So as you say, doctors have told you a number of times that you wouldn't survive. What is the role of faith and belief and just that mental resolve when living with a condition like this?
You know, my mother always emphasized, she told me that if something does not have a voice, it could never defeat me. And no matter how many times she told me, it always came back to say whatever she says came to life. So I got to be part and parcel of if something doesn't have a voice, it can never defeat me.
So that's
I gave the virus a chance to take me to the grave. It failed. Now it's my turn to do what it failed to do.
Yes. And you live according to what you describe as five pillars. I think that can be incredibly empowering to not just people living with the HIV virus, anyone battling a condition.
Yes.
So what are those pillars?
There's number one, which is very important, nutrition. You can grow your garden or you can buy your garden. There's the mindset that you need to have the ASK, which is the attitude, skill, and knowledge, which brings you to the exercise. You don't need the gym. You can walk, jog, stretch, as long as your body is active.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the medication. It doesn't have to be medical. It can be herbal. It can be, you know, just water, therapy, anything that you want to feed your body with, even Chinese tea. Then the main and final core is the one which I love so much, support.
Uh-huh.
Whether it's the church, the schools, your friends, your family, they have to be behind you.
Mm.
To say, if you need support, we are there for you.
Yes, but we still live in a time where there is stigma, there is secrecy, there is shame still attached.
Or the DDS.
To it.
I call it the DDS syndrome.
What is it?
Disclosure, denial, stigma.
Hmm.
But it comes back to the, you know, the two sides of the I call it the T account.
Hmm.
There's the abstain, be faithful, condomize. That is, I mean, that's gospel for the last 100 years.
Yes.
But if you don't follow that, you jump the line. The A changes from abstain to adapt, living with the virus. The B, if you're not being faithful, you're going to become bold to take ARVs when they want you to.
Mm-hmm.
The only freedom that you get is to choose the time. From then on, it's finished.
Mm.
Then the C, instead of you condomizing, you're going to have courage to conquer the DDS.
That's such an uplifting message. You know, I feel like I'm welling up just listening to you now because there's so much we can all draw from that. When you look back at that era when Thabo Mbeki and the late then Minister of Health, Manto Shabalala Msimang, when they raised these questions about ARVs for the treatment of HIV, how did that make you feel? And how does it make you feel knowing that your survival, a big part of it anyway, depends on the decisions of other people, lawmakers, administrators, people who decide policy, and
you know,
so on.
You know, the best part is that, you know, at one point in my life, I was invited to a board meeting where there were traditional healers and medical doctors.
Mm-hmm.
I was put in the middle as the referee. So one was blaming the other, and I got tired of the blame. I told the traditional healer, say, relax. I told the doctors the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I told them for 23 years, I lived on herbal medicine that my mother put me on. I was not on ARVs.
Mm-hmm.
But those herbal could not suppress the virus. That's why it was always increasing.
Yeah.
That's where the doctors came in. So unless those two come together to find the solution, say, if we can keep the virus intact, the traditional healers are going to sort out the virus while it's under weakening.
So it was a combination.
Yeah. Now, when you become the evidence of the combination, those guys still don't understand that without the other, one cannot move forward.
Mm-hmm.
There's always the blame game to say, what do you do?
Yeah.
Because the medical guys, yes, they've got the ARVs, but how do they override the side effects?
Yes.
You can't take vitamin C. It's a tablet. Go for the orange.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take B complex, take the beetroot. You know, it's so simple that people don't want to go back to the source of what they create.
As you said in part of your the pillars you mentioned,
yes,
starting with nutrition. Yeah. But what is it like? What is it like to live with this virus?
It's not a walk in the park. I will not lie to you. I'll be very honest. You know, you change certain habits, you stop drinking, you stop smoking. You know, when you go clubbing, you even lose that value of clubbing because you see a bunch of people drinking alcohol, but there's that caution, let's say, what will happen if I add alcohol to my system?
Mm-hmm.
There's that awareness that you start living a life of caution. Every single day, you are taught to walk bare feet on gravel. You can either choose to fit in the gravel or you can give up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't deal with the gravel, it will be added to more gravel.
Yes.
So the lifestyle that you're given, you have to adapt to it.
Mm. One thing that was moving was when you said that your freedoms are then limited.
Yes,
the only freedom you have is when.
Is
all the
when.
Time.
It's the time.
Yeah.
You choose, it's either 5, 6, 7, or 8. From then on, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you cannot deal with that simple instruction, those guys will come in numbers.
Yes. You are in the process, of course, of writing a book. It's due to be released in February next
yes,
year. Crushed, yet not destroyed.
With an I, not an E.
Okay.
Because the I was not disappointed. I was not disconnected. You know, disappear, disabled. It's the D-I-S, distributed everything. And there's a catch beneath it, which is the secret that saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
Secrets never have a good ending.
Mm-hmm.
But mine had a great ending.
Mm-hmm. And what are the questions? Have you ever said, why me?
All the time. I used to ask that question, why me, from 2005 until 2010. And then when that email from my aunt in the UK came, we said, she's heard of my story so many times, but it was not of my wrongdoing,
mm-hmm.
but a fault in reproduction. That's when it came back to say, whatever doesn't have a voice can never defeat you.
Yes.
So it all made sense to say, in everything that I'm going through, it was not of my fault. I can choose to blame, or I can become the bigger person that the blame hates.
Right. So what's your message ahead of World AIDS Day? I think your story on its own is absolutely encouraging and uplifting. We can learn a lot on how to live, whether we have the condition or not.
You know, there is so much preaching going out there, but the best message I can tell the whole continent, know your status, because it will allow you to know who you are.
Mm. Wow. Ndimbwe, thank you very much.
No, thank you, Azania.
It is so, you are my hero for the day. I think in life, whenever you have these experiences and you reflect back on the day and there's an experience or a person that you interacted with that you think, yes, that is the highlight. This was certainly it. Thank you very much.
No, it's a pleasure.